Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine. My name is Juwanza. Great to have you aboard with us. I'm very excited, as always, to have another opportunity to do our entrepreneurial segment of Health, Wealth, and Divine. As you know, every 2 weeks, we have a grand opportunity to actually sit at the feet of someone who's gotten over 50 years of experience under his entrepreneurial belt. Okay, and we are very, very fortunate, again, to be able to sit and glean from that experience. To all of the new listeners, I want to say welcome, welcome, welcome. You're going to love this show. Again, if you're an entrepreneur or if you know of an entrepreneur, you need to let them know that every 2 weeks on this show, we have, the honor and the privilege of gleaning from an author of two fabulous books. We'll tell you about those books. We're going to be talking. And this lesson, I'll call it a lesson for today, is actually going to be coming from one of the books, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. This is the fourth edition. My guest is also the author of Finding a Career for Life, another powerful book that can actually change the course of your life, literally. If you actually get the book and you read it, which we'll tell you all about that and what that book is about as well during the course of the show. But again, for all of the new listeners, if you're not familiar with my guest, I'll tell you, my special guest for today is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, again, author of the book Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top, and also Finding a Career for Life. And currently retired, Professor Geiger grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business at the University of Denver. And over that time, he has started over 10 businesses, two of which predated his college graduation. And after his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship and small business management in order to help people succeed in business. And he also wrote, again, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. And he's currently residing in Richmond, Virginia. And again, as I mentioned, we're very fortunate to have an opportunity to speak to somebody who's got over 50 years experience. And I say this because that's important. That's like that's a half a century. Okay, so if somebody has been doing something for longer than you've been born, okay, and they've been doing it successfully and written a book on how you can do it, you really need to listen to that person. So it's with that in mind that we're honored again to have as my guest today, Professor Joseph T. Geiger. Thank you so much for agreeing to come back on. Awesome series we're in the middle of. And again, I'm really thankful to have an opportunity to speak with somebody with your knowledge and wisdom. Great to have you back.
Thank you very much, Juwanza. This is looking forward to our session today.
You know, Professor, before we get into the book, again, we've got new listeners. We're constantly getting new listeners, and there are people who are listening probably today who haven't listened to previous shows yet. And I always, when I'm interviewing somebody, like the listeners to understand why they're listening to someone. You know, why is it that, you know, what makes this person the expert in this particular field, and what actually got them started in this field? I mean, because, again, you've been an entrepreneur for over half a century, okay? So
yep.
That's before word was even known in many segments of, you know, society. So if you could share what actually, you know, got you started in becoming an entrepreneur, and did you ever work another job? Did you ever work for somebody else, you know? I mean, because you've been doing this for so long. I mean, it's probably been so long since you've actually worked for someone else. And, you know, could you talk about that and the difference in that? There's certain a feeling, I'm sure, that comes along with starting, building your own business as opposed to just getting a check from working a 9-to-5.
Well, actually, I started the first business 65 years ago. So I appreciate it when you say 50 because it makes me feel younger than I actually am. But I did not work for anybody else until I had retired, and I got bored, and so I took the job at Office Depot, I think, was the first one. And then from there went to Home Depot and from there to college. And the college thing was just as a rent-a-cop. And the reason I chose that was, one, it was open, and two, I figured that that way I would get to know people in the college, because I wanted to teach. I thought I had a good deal to tell people, because so few have been at it as long as I had, and is in such a varied way. It's one thing to start one business and spend your whole life in, and you it's successful and so on. But each business has its own flavor. The trip wires that are in one business may not be in another. So I had owned manufacturers, started and owned manufacturing companies and sales companies and service companies. I'd done them all. And so I had some experience. But I really didn't have a job with in the sense that you're using the word, until I was retired for the first time, actually the second time. And I take that back. I had a business for a short period of time. A friend of mine, I had retired, and a friend of mine said, "Would you come back and try to help us in our marketing of small airplanes?" He was my daughter's godfather, and we knew each other very well. I admired the man a great deal, and so I went in, and I worked for him for, I think it was $500 a week and 3% commission, because I was going to jack up his sales. And shortly, within about 6 months, I said, "Well, look, why don't you just keep the $500 a week and I'll stay with the commission?" And then after a year, he said, "You're making more than I'm making." And I said, "That's true. But it's also true that the total of your business has more than doubled. So maybe I'm worth it." And he allowed us, well, that was also true, and the profits of the business had more than doubled, so perhaps that was true. But most of my life I have spent running small businesses, and I wrote the book, Entrepreneurial Success, because when I started teaching, I found out that the textbooks were all well and good in theory, but if you take a chapter in one of the textbooks and say, "Well, this really sounds good, how do I put it in operation? How do I execute it?" The answer is, well, you probably can't. And so the 105 business principles are 105 business principles that you actually can execute. And if you have a problem in an area, you go to the book, assuming it addresses that problem the way it addresses it, it will give you an answer that you can actually put into operation. And that is, I think, the big difference between my book and others.
You know, Professor, if we could, before we actually get into the lesson for today, just before we do that, can we talk for a moment just about the mindset of making money, because many people think about starting a business because, you know, they want to make money. You know, the stories that I've heard of entrepreneurs, the books that I've read of people who were entrepreneurs that went out and made fortunes, you know, they rarely, if ever, have I heard of somebody just starting a business because they had an idea that they just thought would benefit the world, you know. And I'm sure that there are those that have those stories, you know, that they had an idea and they thought that, oh, the world needs this and money was secondary. But, and there are the others who start businesses out of necessity. As you mentioned in previous shows, that a vast majority of people in their working lifetime will at some point become entrepreneurs. Some of that is because fired, you know, or laid off, and they out of necessity. They become an entrepreneur, not because necessarily that they want to, you know, change the world, but could you talk about the mindset of making money and the entrepreneur? Because when you started your businesses, obviously you had an idea, you know, and you saw it through to the end. What role did And at some point, making a profit is going to come into it. Of course, if you don't make a profit, you're going to go out of business.
Right.
But, you know, at some point, at what role did making money come into play in the when you were an entrepreneur, and what mindset do you think that an entrepreneur has to have, or attitude towards money, to become a successful entrepreneur?
Well, you mentioned people who got fired and started the business. Actually, that's how Home Depot happened. Two guys were working for a store similar to Home Depot, and it was a single store. They both got fired. They got crossways with the boss, and they got fired, and they decided, well, we can do it better. And quite obviously, that was true. They could do it better and did.
Mm-hmm.
To answer your question, I think if you're going to be successful, the idea needs to come first. And then you try to figure out, can I make money at it? And if it looks like you can, well, maybe it's something to proceed with, at least to progress and see if how other things fall in place. But I think it's a mistake to say, first I want to make money, and then I'm going to go try to create something that will do that. I think it should be the other way around. If you come up with an idea that makes money, it will have a long-term success. If you come up with you just want to make money and you think, well, I think this will do it, I think that's backwards. And the people I have talked to in my career, which are hundreds and hundreds, and some were very successful, others were modestly successful, what I hear all the time was, at least when they started with an idea that they thought people needed and would sell. And then they did a business plan, and the business plan told them, yes, this will make money. So I think that's the way it really goes.
Well, what about people who just take the idea that I can do this? When I say I can do this, or for example, you might take somebody, just to use the example of somebody who can cook, and, you know, they've just been told all of their life, you know, you're a good cook, you know, you are an excellent cook. Have you ever thought about starting a restaurant, opening up your own shop? You can really cook. Or somebody who's an auto mechanic, who's just good with his hands, you know, and has just been told all his life, you know what I mean? Man, you go around here working on everybody else's cars, you know, maybe you ought to think about opening up a shop or something. Now, they might not be in it to necessarily make money. Again, they're not trying to lose money, but because they've been told they could do it, you know, it just seems like a logical transition. Well, I guess I am good with my hands, right? You know, I guess I really can cook. You know, people have told me that all my life, or, you know, I can do hair, or, you know. And so somebody in that situation's attitude towards making a profit, you know, could be secondary, because you have people that just really, really love what they do. You have women that
absolutely
love doing hair, you know, you know,
sure.
You know, guys just love working on cars. They'd be out there tinkering with their car, you know what I mean? They'll take an engine apart and put it back together just for the fun of it, you know, because they love it, you know, not so much because they want to make money. So it certainly helps love what you do, correct?
Well, to answer your question, I think that kind of mindset can have a lot of disasters built into it, in that it's one of the reasons that restaurants have such a terrible reputation of being financially successful. And I heard, my goodness, I heard 60 years ago people talking about being in the restaurant business and how many of restaurants failed. To the point where I don't care how much money you have, nobody who understands the industry goes out and buys brand new commercial cooking equipment to start a restaurant. And the reason is because you can buy virtually brand new cooking equipment to start a restaurant from somebody who was in it for 6 months and went broke, and they made the mistake of buying brand new stuff. So If you love to cook, great. And you decide that there you ought to have a restaurant of some sort, a French cuisine, whatever. And because you really love that sort of stuff, fine. Do a business plan. For God's sakes, do a business plan.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do your business plan, maybe, just maybe, you will find out that this running a restaurant's not quite as easy as it seems. That business people are successful if they know what they're doing or are real quick studies. But people who love to do things, such as cook, and do not really understand the business intricacies of it, go broke. Because the business is what goes broke, not that you can't cook. Most restaurants do fine on the cooking side, but they don't do so fine on the business side. And you better get the business side right, because just remember that you'll never know less about your business than the first day you start operating it.
Okay.
So do a business plan and do a cash flow forecast and make darn sure that you do it honestly, you do it very critically, because the time to lose money is before you start spending it on paper. If you're going to lose money on paper. Don't lose it out of your bank account. And just remember this: when you're losing money, whose money it is? It's yours. You know, nobody is going to come in and give you a whole lot of money and say, go ahead and have a go at it, pal, if you don't have a lot at stake. So do what you love, for goodness sake, but make sure you do a business plan.
Some of that being something at stake might be some of your own money. You might have to have some of your own skin in the game before they even consider.
Not may, Juanza, you will. This idea that you're going to find somebody who finances you in total, that only happens in people's dreams, and if you happen to have the good sense of getting born by rich and generous parents, you will have your own money. I don't know of anybody who didn't have to put up everything they had. Now, maybe everything they had turns out to be 5% of what was needed, and they got the rest, the 95% from others. But they darn well put up everything they had just for openers.
Well, you know, you mentioned the business plan, and I just want everybody to know there's a chapter on the business plan in the book that we're actually discussing. It was actually the chapter that preceded this one. And for those of you who'd like to know more about the business plan, go back and listen to the previous shows by Professor Geiger. Those shows are in the archives. Did an awesome, awesome group of shows on the business plan, because you're definitely going to need to know what the business plan is, what the business plan entails, and as well as the cash flow forecast, and we'll get into more of that as we continue on in the book. Well, again, today we're coming from the book Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles. We're going through the book chapter by chapter, principle by principle. We're in chapter 4. We're at a particular point in the book where if you haven't been taking notes, you really need to get your pad and pen and start writing some things down, because today we're going to be talking about the 6-step program for solving business problems. We actually started that 2 weeks ago, and so we're going through those steps. And so, Professor, if you don't mind, for our listeners who weren't with us last time, could you lay out the 6 steps?
Sure.
And then we are. Thank you.
Yeah. The first of the 6 steps is decisions should be data-driven. In other words, do not make emotional decisions. Make data-driven decisions. Make sure that your data is accurate, it's true, it's not a pipe dream, it's reality. Number 2 is define the problem. What is your problem? And it doesn't make any difference here whether your problem is, should I start this business, or how am I going to go on vacation next month That's the problem. So you need to define it. You need to know what the problem is before you try to start solving it. It's just remarkable how many people try to solve problems that they have not defined. The third thing is set goals. So once you've defined the problem, where do you want to go? Where do you want to be a week from now, a month from now, a year from now? Where do you want to be? Depends upon how big your problem is, whether it's a problem that you set a one-month goal or a one-week goal or a three-year goal. If you're starting a business, you better have a pretty good idea of where you want to be 3 years from now and where you want to be 2 years and 1 year and 6 months and 1 month. So you need to have those pretty well laid out. The next step is the one we'll start with today, and that's create a plan to solve the problem and minimize the cost. And the basic plan doesn't, where I say minimize the cost, you'll understand this right now. This will sound a little crazy, but the basic plan doesn't have a whole lot to do with money. It will cause money to be spent, but you don't set it up on the basis of I've got so much money to spend. You set it up to how do I solve the problem, and we set a goal. So we've defined the problem and set a goal, and this is how you go about getting to the goal. The fifth step is design a cash flow forecast plan. And you design the plan from your problem-solving plan. And then the last one is work the plan daily. So we can go back and start with create a plan to solve the problem and minimize cost. And what do you have some other comments, Juanza?
Just that, you know, people need to know if you're an entrepreneur that, you know, I know that people are really excited when they're going into business and, you know, they want to think positive and, you know, people don't want to think negative or whatever, but there will be issues that arise. I mean, that is a given. You're not going to get around it.
You got that.
You know, so people like, I don't want to talk about problems. Well, look, this is part of owning a business and growing a business. There are going to be problems. I mean, this is life stuff.
Are there ever? Yeah.
So you can just remember that there will be problems. That's why the book is written, okay, you don't have to go through this without a map, a road map. So I just wanted to get that out of the way because there are going to be issues that arise, and, you know, just know that, and to be forewarned is to be forearmed.
Yep, that's okay. Absolutely true. And so the one we're dealing with now is create a plan, and so that one is let me start with maybe an example, a story about something that actually happened.
Okay.
I was in the airplane business. And this was about, in the 1980s, I guess, 1970s. And I was in the small airplane business, and the Arabs embargoed raw fuel coming into the U.S. because we had done some stuff that they didn't like. And needless to say, airplanes burn fuel. And so what suddenly happened was that all of a sudden we couldn't buy fuel anymore. Actually, it was totally stopped. The production of aviation gasoline was stopped for about a week or 10 days. And very fortunately for me, because what that meant for me is I was in the aircraft sales business, the charter business, the teaching, flight school business, that meant that all of that was gone. It just wasn't going to happen. And fortunately, some people got to Jimmy Carter, who was the president at that time, and said, look, you understand that a lot of people think that airplanes are play toys, but how about the farmers that need to spray their crops with herbicides and so on in order to raise wheat and corn and all of our foods. And you understand that now that you have stopped aviation gas, that you have stopped all of that, and the farms are going to have tremendous cuts in their ability to grow products. So they reinstated the gasoline, fortunately. But It was more expensive, and a lot of things were hurt. So one of the things that was a problem, I knew that, our retail sales, which was one of the big things for us, was going to go downhill fast. So I decided I'm going to have to change my advertising. How do I keep my sales up? And so my problem was to figure out a sales program that would work under these very unusual conditions. And what we'd done in the past, what everybody did in Southern California, we advertised in the LA Times, and it cost us to run ads in the one ad section is where most of it was. It would cost about $250 a week, so $1,000 a month. And it was obvious that wasn't going to work. So what can I do? And I decided I had never done this before, but let's have a go at it. We were selling a brand-new airplane that was very, very fuel-efficient. So how do I tell people who are prospects for our airplane to how fuel-efficient it was? So what I decided to do is get a list of all the people who owned airplanes in Southern California, which was pretty easy to do because they're like cars. They all have serial numbers. So you could ask the FAA to give you a list of all the airplanes down there, and they did. And so I set up a direct mail program. I learned how to print a little brochure, and we sent it out in groups. Every week we would send probably 500 or more of these out, and there was in Southern California it was close to 2,000. So it took about a month to go through them, and as it turns out, our costs actually went down because I could find out what it cost to print my stuff I was going to send out. I found out what it cost to get the names and what it cost to actually mail each piece. And so all we had was time. So I set myself and one of the I had one salesman. We stopped selling for about 3 days a week while we were the ones who sent out this stuff. We did the actual hand labor to do it. And the net result was, instead of costing $1,000 a month, it was about $400 or $500. But we got to every single prospect who already owned an airplane of some size. And as it turns out, where everybody else in the airplane business in Southern California, their sales went down, mine actually went up. And that's how you solve the problem. We had a problem. We set a goal. We said, okay, we're going to have to make up all these brochures. What's it cost to do that? Who's going to do that? Who's going to paste them up? Who's going to do it all? That was the business plan. And then what's it cost to actually print them? What's it cost to mail them? What's our time going to be? Well, I was already paying them. So that wasn't much of a deal. It cost less, and we did better. I would never have gone to direct mail had it not been for the oil embargo. So what started that looked like a death knell turned out to be a big advantage.
Let me ask you a question before we go to the next principle. And also, I see the callers calling in. To those, if you have a question or like to make a comment, all you have to do is just press 1 if you'd like to join the conversation. Professor, and I don't want to take the conversation somewhere else, but you said something that made this question come to my mind, and that was when you mentioned that the FAA had serial numbers on all of the planes, and so just like, I guess, be with cars, you could, you know, easily track who got what, who had bought planes or whatever.
Right.
Did you have a mentor? Again, in these various, I know you've done business in various business sectors. Now we're speaking. You were just speaking about the airplane business. Did you have a mentor? You know, someone who, because I was just thinking about how information comes to people. I mean, you obviously knew that you could get information on who bought planes based upon, you know, you had to go to the FAA and you could get that information, you know. And I was just wondering, did you have mentors to guide you? And I'm sure that's the purpose of this book, is for those who are entrepreneurs or budding entrepreneurs or would-be entrepreneurs, that you have this book can serve as a mentor. But were these many of these principles born just out of trial and error, or did you have a mentor along the way to, you know, say, okay, hey, you're in this situation now, this is how you deal with it?
Not in the sense you're using the word, Joanne. I knew people who were in business, and we talked over problems. Because I always found it just fascinating to talk to business people and how they solve their problems and so on. In this particular case, no, I did not. And so I'd worked for somebody for a short period of time selling yachts, and then I had so I had been selling airplanes. And whenever we sold an airplane, we had to fill out paperwork for the FAA so that they knew who bought the airplane, what it was, what the serial numbers were, what the N number on the tail of the airpline that designated that particular airplane, who it was, who bought it, where they lived, and so on. So I knew all of that because I'd been doing that, but it never had occurred to me to do direct sales or direct marketing. I just had never done it. And this was just, hey, what we're doing is not working, and we better do something else and do it fast. So the problem was, how do you get to people who are prospects for your product? My product was new airplanes. And how do I get to them? So that's the problem. The goal was we want to get to everybody who owns or might own an airplane, both somewhat smaller and larger than what we sold. And so that, how do you do that? And the FAA and direct marketing was the answer. So it's just going step by step, asking yourself the questions and finding an answer for it.
This is interesting. I'm really enjoying this conversation. Everybody, we're going through the book principle by principle, chapter by chapter. We're in the chapter 4, How Entrepreneurs View Financial Statements, and we are currently on principle number 38.
Six.
Now, I take that back. We're currently on
36.
36.
Yeah, we're going to be 36.
And this principle cannot be overstated, okay? You cannot overstate this principle. This principle can make or break your business, so please pay close attention to this. Professor, for the entrepreneur, cash flow forecast is the king of the financial statements. Can't be overstated. Financial documents can't be overstated, can it?
Yep. Yeah, the other financial documents that everybody talks about are P&L, a business statement. What those tell you about is the past. They tell you about what you did last week, last month, last year. But if you're an entrepreneur, what you're really interested in is what's in the future. And how do you forecast how much money you're going to spend and where it's going to go and what's the income going to be and who you have working and doing what and when? In the future. The past is the past. You can't change that. You can learn from it, but you can't change it. So what can you do for the future? So a cash flow forecast it looks like a profit and loss statement is done in great detail. It's the sort of thing that profit and loss statements that your accountant does, but very often you don't see it. Certainly nowadays with computers, the computer knows all about this stuff. You just write in what your expenses are and what your incomes were and what happened to your inventory, and the computer does it. Fortunately, there are a bunch of cash flow forecast templates out there. And what you want is a template that's a fill-in-the-blanks. If you're interested in seeing one, you can go to my book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, and go, if you want, to the website, theroadtothetop.com, and in it, look up a profit and loss statement, and it will show you one of those, and then a cash flow, and if you want, for $15, you can buy a cash flow statement, and it's a 26-page fill-in-the-blanks. I don't know how many lines there are, but there's lots of them, and there's hundreds upon hundreds of formulas. So when you put something in, it ripples through the whole thing. It's a three-year profit and loss statement, which is what real profit or cash flow forecast should be. And the first year is monthly. The second and third years are quarterly. And you go through it, and the more detail you put in there, the more important it is, or the better it is for you. So if you're running a shoe store, women's shoe store, men's shoe store, doesn't make any difference, all your income comes from selling shoes, what you don't do is say, well, I'm going to sell $1 million worth of shoes. Oh, really? No kidding. So where are you going to get that inventory? You call up a shoemaker and say, send me $100,000 of shoes. They probably want a little more information than that, like a whole lot more. What size are they? What color are they? What style are they? And you need to put all that down. So when you're trying to decide, do your cash flow forecast, you better figure out what kind of shoes you think you're going to sell. And you don't just put down for January, I'm going to sell $100,000 worth of shoes. I don't think doing that you're going to sell any shoes, because you can't order a shoe or a pair of shoes. You got it. What size are they? What color are they? What kind are they? Are they women's or men's? Are they high heels or work boots? What are they? So you have to put all that down. And my little cash flow statement has, I think it's 32 or 28 lines for inventory. And if you want, you can make way more of them. And it makes you decide how many of a particular kind of shoe are you going to sell each month for 12 months. And let's say you have 50 different makes and models of shoes. Well, you're going to have to decide on every one of those makes and models, all 50 of them, how many are you going to sell in January, and how many of them in February, and so on. So what is the electric bill going to be in January and February? What's your personnel going to cost in January and February, and so on? So it's a big job, and once you decide you're going to have three people working in your shoe shop, and you're the fourth, you don't need to worry about paying you, because unless everybody else gets paid and all the other bills get paid, you're not going to get paid anything. Mm-hmm. So you put the three people down. And then you estimate, well, I'd like to make $1,000 a month. So you put yourself down as $1,000 a month. And you look at, when you get all through with all this stuff, you look at, well, how'd we do in January? Well, actually, in January, we lost 2,000. Well, in cash, you actually lost 1,000 because you aren't going to pay yourself. So you're out of luck there. And do I have $1,000 in the bank after I paid for all my inventory and all the other stuff that we've got to do? What do I have in the bank? And if your answer is, well, actually, I've got $500 less or left to go into February, what now? You're in trouble. So that's the cash flow forecast is the most important part you can do in any business. It tells you whether your business idea is viable, and is it how viable is it? Do you have you're doing fine for 5 months, and then you run out of money in the 6th month, but in the 7th month you really hit your stride and you've got $5,000 in the bank, and in the 8th month you've got $20,000 in the bank. This is wonderful. The problem is that you went broke in the 5th month, so you never made it to the 6th. And all of that is a bloom and pipe dream. You're broke. You're out of business. Your people aren't paid, and you owe everybody in the world money, and they're coming after you. So that's the reason for this cash flow forecast that's just absolutely critical.
Any particular reason, Professor, why the first year you're doing it monthly and the second year quarterly, second and third year quarterly?
Well,
is it because of the detail that you went into in the first year that it's not necessary to do that monthly in the second?
Pretty much. It is unlikely that you can be terribly detailed in the second or the third year. So what I did, I would do it in a monthly for the first year. And then every 3 months, I would go back to the second year and pick up the first quarter of the second year, turn it into months, and tack that on to the end of the yearly program. So the yearly program always was 12 months. I mean, it went down to 9 months and then back up to 12, down to 9, back up to 12. And I'd make changes because the chances of you guessing it right or figuring it right 100% are poor. So make the changes as soon as you possibly can. So if you find out that men's brown shoes aren't selling very well, don't keep ordering men's brown shoes. Maybe black shoes are selling real well. And maybe all of a sudden tennies are what people are wearing. Who knows what it is? But you need to, if you do it in great detail, you catch the little problem as early as you possibly can, and the little problem, when solved, does not become a big problem. If you don't do that, what happens in 6 months, you find out you're broke.
Well, Professor, the calls are coming in. You ready to take one?
Go for it.
All right. I'm going to call the last 4 digits of your number. 4853. You're on the air with Professor Joseph Geiger. Thank you for your patience. 4853,
hello.
You're on the air. Hello?
Yes, bro.
4853.
I'll press 1 again. How much time y'all got on the call left? Because I'm in a meeting right now.
Oh, we'll be going for about 15 more minutes.
Okay, I'll press 1 again. Take me out of queue, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
Okay, Professor. We're going to the next one. Oh,
okay.
By the way, now, somebody who, well, before we go to the next one, just again, back to this real quick. Somebody might say, let's say they're in their first year, they just got the cash flow forecast, and they're trying to project, and they're saying, you know what, I don't know what I'm going to be making in the fall. I've never done this before. This is my first year. I can't project how much I'm going to be making. You know, I can't tell you how much ice cream I'm going to sell, you know, in June, and it's January, and I haven't done this before. Or businesses like that where They haven't done it before. And so what would you say to somebody that says, well, how do I make these projections? If this is my first year, it seems like it would be easier to project in the second and third year because I can extrapolate from the prior years and say, okay, based upon those years, I can expect this. But if you've never done it before, for someone who's thinking along those lines, what would you say?
Well, that's the problem I faced in every one of the businesses I started that I didn't that I had not done before. If it's possible, is there a way that you can pre-sell things? I'll give you an example. I decided one time to start making redwood coffee tables. My wife wanted one, and we couldn't find a local one. I couldn't order one table at anything like the a price that I thought was reasonable because none were made in Southern California. They were all made in Northern California, and they were big and bulky, and they were odd-shaped. And if you put them in a truck, when I talked to people who made them up there and said about putting them in a box and shipping them down, they said, we'll do it, but we'll guarantee you it'll be damaged. I don't know, you know. So I decided to just see if I could pre-sell them. And what I did was order a turn this damn thing off. There we go. Sorry, okay. Fella. What I did is I put a little ad in the Los Angeles magazine with a picture of a little coffee table, and I asked for, if you're interested, here's where you call. They did that, and lo and behold, in 10 days from the time the ad came out, I had three coffee tables sold and more coming. If I could sell five of them, I could pay for 36, the material to make 36 coffee tables. And so I ordered the 36 coffee tables, crossed my fingers and ordered them. Within two or three days, I had five sold, and by the time they actually got there, I had eight sold. So I had a profit built in. And I had no idea how many, but what I did is I put an ad in there and said, I got coffee tables to sell. And when people said, well, I want my coffee table next week, I said, well, I can't do that. We're making them for you. And each one is different. I mean, it's the nature of the product because it's very irregular, the redwood coffee tables. But I sold eight coffee tables, which guaranteed me a profit for the first 36 that I built. And before I really ever started to build the first one, and people have told me, gee, that's not very kosher, is it? I mean, you know, you're selling things you don't have. Well, I did cash the checks. I just put a checks in, and away we went.
Interesting. Well, you know, Professor, I know we've only got about 10 minutes left in the show, and the next one, I think we'll probably have to wait until next week on, is unless you can do it.
Yeah,
well,
that I could do the next one really quickly.
Okay. Plan your work long term, work your plan for the short term. That is principle number 37.
Yeah, so you've got a three-year plan. How do you work the plan? Well, what I did with it, I would take the first month and divide it into four parts for the first week and decide what I wanted to accomplish in this first week in order to stay on target for the plan. And halfway through the week, we'd take an estimate, myself and the folks I had working with me, and how we do it. And if we were doing great, that's great. If we were falling short, what do we need to do to get on schedule? And so by the end of the first week, we were either on schedule or we weren't. Oft times we weren't. So we had to make adjustments in the second week. And you make small adjustments. And that way you solve little tiny problems, baby step problems, in order not to fall in a deep pit. And that's all it is. That's all there is to it. You plan for the long term, and you work your plan almost daily. You certainly work your plan weekly. And you stay with it all the time. Because if you ever get behind, you got a problem that may turn out to be terribly expensive. So if you find the problem, you solve it when it's a little tiny problem. So that's
you
all
know,
there is to that.
People really seem to be results-oriented. You know, when you're going and you're doing a business or whatever, your bottom line is results. I mean, if your results
right.
are good, you're going to stay in business. If your results are bad, you're going to fail. And when it comes to turning a profit, though, you know, I think that people going into any entrepreneurship venture, in most cases, go into it with the idea that it might take a minute before I turn a profit. You know, but if I do things in a particular way, at some point, you know, the leads are going to start coming in, the sales are going to start coming in, you know, marketing is going to take off, people are going to find out about the business, and at some point, I can expect to turn a profit. Although, they may not expect that within the first month or so. You know, they're just trying to get known. Could you talk about that for a moment, just
yeah,
the mindset
I sure will.
That you have to do the things necessary to work your plan daily and weekly so that, you know, you will ultimately turn a profit, but you have to believe that while you're actually working the plan daily and weekly.
Very often textbooks say that businesses lose money for the first 3 years and then they turn a profit. And if you ever read a textbook that says that, what you know instantly is the jerk who wrote it never ran a business. What he did is he went down and talked to Ford Motor Company or IBM or somebody like that. That's a huge company. Now, they can afford to wait 3 years for a profit. Small businesses cannot. Depends upon the kind of business that you're in. But generally speaking, you better come up with a business plan that shows at least a break even fairly close to the third month. And if you're not breaking even, are you closing in fast? Unless you have an awful lot of money. Now, some businesses take a while. Manufacturing businesses take a while because you got to set up your manufacturing plant. You got to order your raw materials. You got to make them. You got to have them all ready to go out to the retailer, whoever is that going to be. And, you know, unless you're making pretty simple things, that's going to take some time. But if you're a retailer or a service organization, you ought to be able to get pretty close to turning an operating profit within a fairly short period of time. Now, I say operating. Operating doesn't have anything to do with writing off your plant, with depreciation, with all that. That's separate. That's a way of reducing your tax liability. But the operating profit is where it really counts. So are you going to have a profit in your daily expenses? In other words, your everything from rent and lights to people and inventory. And so if you can do that, and it needs to be fairly quickly, because, again, that does not apply to manufacturers. But it does apply to service organizations, and it does apply to retailers.
You know, you said something very important, and I think a lot of people don't even think about it. Entrepreneurs, when going into business, they think about, okay, I know I'm going to have to rent this space. But they don't calculate the electricity, you know what I mean?
No.
You know, they don't calculate the fact that you got to keep the lights on. You know, it's more than just,
right.
Okay, I got to this spot, you know what I mean? I have to make enough money to cover the expenses of the rent, the lights, you know, the accounts payables. I mean, all of that. I mean, but you know, lights, just even down to the lights, that is important. You have to
absolutely
factor all of that. With that,
yeah.
Go ahead.
When I was teaching, one of the things we did is the final exam was really doing a business plan, a group business plan. I'd divide the class into four or five people in a team, and the team would pick a business, and they would write a business plan from scratch. And I tell them beforehand that one of the things I look for is the electric the same every month. If it's the same every month, you didn't think it through, because the electric is not going to be the same every month. Is the advertising the same every month? No, that's not going to be the same either. I mean, the advertising is going to go up in October, November, and the first half of December. It's going to go down in January in most cases. So that's what I look for. I wanted people to think this thing through. And so that's what you need to do. And remember, it's your money that's being lost, not some mythical other person's. It's yours.
Everybody, my special guest is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, author of the book Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. We're going through the book principle by principle, chapter by chapter, but you need the book, okay? Because when something comes up in your business and you need to flip through to a principle or a chapter, it might not be on a Tuesday at 7 p.m. You know, you might not be able to pick up the phone and call Professor Geiger. So I recommend that you get this book. I mean, I've read the book like four times. I mean, and it's great. And these are principles not just for business, but for life as well. Professor, how can people get your book?
Well, you could get it two ways. You should go to Amazon, and the title, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles. You need to put the 105 Business Principles in, because they've got a whole bunch of books called Entrepreneurial Success. And or you can order it from me, theroadtothetop.com. And the only difference is I sign them. They cost the same. They're essentially $18. And so there you go. And the big difference is that my book gives you principles that are executable. We got enough time to talk very briefly about one of them. Suppose you have a motel and you want to put up a roadside sign, a billboard. How do you do that? If you go to most books, they'll blather on how the message has got to be catchy, you got to keep people's eyes on it, and on and on. I tell you this, you could have on your billboard one picture and seven words, no more. You can do it. If you can do it with five words, all the better. People can take in a picture and seven words on a billboard as they drive by, but they do not pick up much more than that. Can you do that? That's something that's easy to do. That's the kind of principles I have.
You know what's interesting about that, Professor, is somebody had to actually do some research to come up with the number
yep.
seven, you know. Somebody
they did.
Had to do that
actually,
research.
They did, and they. I learned it when I first got into business, and I wanted to do a sign, and I talked to some people, and I wasn't getting good answers, and I talked to one guy, and that's what he told me, and I said, "Well, how the heck do you know?" And he said, "Well, actually, they've done a whole bunch of research. They put up a bunch of signs. They got people to drive by the signs, and what they learned was if it was seven words and one picture, they could do it." If there were three or four pictures and seven words, they had trouble. If it was eight or nine words, forget it. Wasn't going to happen.
Interesting. Everybody, again, get the book. Okay, Professor Geiger is going to be back in 2 weeks. Okay, he comes on every other Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. If you get the book, you can read ahead, and you can come back, and you can join in the conversation and ask whatever questions you have to the caller who called in. Again, Professor is going to be back on 2 weeks from tonight. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please tell all of your entrepreneur friends about the show. And, again, by all means, I recommend please get the book. again, it is a great read, and again, the principles are not just for business, but for life as well. He's got another book called Finding a Career for Life. We didn't get a chance to talk about that tonight, but we'll talk about that next time as well. Professor, thank you again for your time. Always a pleasure. You've been doing this for longer than a lot of the listeners have even been born. So once again, as I mentioned, but the show, if somebody's been doing something for over 50 years, okay, or closer to 65 years, and you're 40, okay, or you're in your 50s, then this person has some information that you need to sit and sit with and consider. So do that. Again, get the book. It could be the best $18 or rounded off $19 that you've spent in your life. It could save you millions of dollars and or it can make you millions of dollars. It can do both, so it has that power. Professor, thank you so much. Look forward to our next show next week, or shall I say in 2 weeks.
So do I. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
Take care. Everybody, that is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, again, author of the book Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. He comes on every 2 weeks, every other Tuesday. Professor is my special guest. Now, again, let me just share this because I think it's important. A lot of, you know, everybody that listens to the show knows that Health, Wealth, and Divine, also known as Jawanza for Life, is a very spiritual show. I mean, we have people on talking about everything, I mean, in terms of spirituality. I mean, we talk about meditation. We talk about yoga. We talk about fasting. We talk about holistic health. We talk about a lot of things. What's interesting to me is that a lot of people have made a choice to be one or the other, you know. Now, my position is that you can be spiritual and also make money. You know, you don't have to, you know, choose between the two. A lot of people have done that. A lot of people have chosen to be between the two. A lot of people have said, well, I'm on the spiritual path, so, you know, money's not important to me, or making money or entrepreneurship, nah, that ain't me, you know. But you can do both. You've been blessed with gifts and talents, you know, that you can use to benefit yourself, your family, your community, your nation. I mean, you don't have to do one to the exclusion of the other. And just because you are, say, business-minded and, you know, you've got an aptitude for numbers and business and you can, you know, go out here and build businesses, doesn't mean that you have to do that to the exclusion of your spirituality. So that is why the show is titled Health, Wealth, and Divine, okay, because our health is our wealth. We talk about all of that, okay? So I just want to make that clear. Again, a lot of spiritual people have made the choice that I'm on a spiritual path, and use that as a reason for not chasing their dreams. At some point, they had ideas. They had dreams of starting their own business or a great idea. You know I can go out here and I can do this. And this fabulous idea that stayed an idea. Well, where did the idea come from? I mean, think about that for a second. Where do ideas come from? Okay, that idea was placed in your brain, okay, by, what, call it whatever you like, the universe, the Netaru, I mean, whatever you want to call it. But now that you have the idea, how do you take that idea, that wonderful, awesome idea that was given to you and nobody else, and make that idea a reality? How do you get that idea out of your head and onto the paper and off of the paper and into some physical entity that you can call your business? I recommend there are going to be a lot of things that you have to do to make it happen. One of the things I would recommend is get this book. It's called Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 105 Business Principles. I don't just go around recommending stuff, okay? I've read this book like 4 times, and I have Professor Geiger on every other week to go through the book principle by principle so that you can have a guide. Because in starting a business, you're going to need it. There are going to be a lot of things that you're going to have to focus on and consider that you never had to focus on or consider before. It's going to take up a lot of your waking hours thinking about your business. And if somebody is willing to take you by the hand and walk you through certain things, now there's 105 business principles in this book. God only knows how many situations are going to come up in your business. You may need all 105, or you may just need 5. It depends on your business. But if you want to increase the odds that you will be successful in business, listen to someone who's done it for approximately 65 years successfully. Okay? So all I can do is recommend the book. Okay? I guarantee you, if you get it, you will do the same. You will recommend it to someone else, okay? Hey, the holidays are coming up. So for all of you who have entrepreneurs in your family, it'd be a great gift. You know, all you have to do is just, hey, theroadtothetop.com. But if you're going to get entrepreneurial success, The Road to the Top, if you Google it, make sure you put in 105 business principles, because there are a lot of books out there titled Entrepreneurial Success. So you want to make sure that you get the right one, right? So it's 105 business principles, The Road to the Top. Again, Professor Geiger is going to be back on in 2 weeks. Please tune in. And again, for all of the people who have been listening and following the show, to all of the new listeners, thank you, Duau, for tuning in. I really appreciate it. The numbers are growing. Share this information with your friends. Okay, again, we've got an awesome archives. If you haven't scrolled down the archives, take a trip down the archives. You will see some awesome shows. I recently did a show this past, I think it was about a week ago today, with Orwa Amtahudi Kamo, okay, talking about the Kundalini intensive yoga that they had in Philadelphia. Awesome interview with him, which was based on the brand new book by Shechem Ashechem, Dr. Raul Nefer Amen. Okay, so his brand new book is out, called, again, Kundalini Yoga, Light on Kundalini Yoga. Okay, Union Between God and Man. You definitely want to get that book. Mine is on the way. Okay, so I can't wait to get it. But until then, if you haven't gotten the book, you can go back and listen to the interview. And that was about, 2 weeks ago. That was with Shechem Ashechem, Dr. Raul Nefer Amen. Also in the archives most recently is an interview with Dr. Orwa Hehi Medurain Comet. They are taking a trip back to Ghana and Benin on December the 28th, I believe it is, through January the 11th. Okay, so if you've never been to Africa and you want to go, you've always wanted to go, but you didn't want to go by yourself, or you didn't want to go and not know where you were going and didn't just want to stay in the hotel, you want an awesome experience, definitely go back and listen to that show. It will give you all the information, and you can consider making arrangements to go, okay, plan to go back to Africa, to Ghana and Benin. And that's from from December the 28th of this year through January the 11th of 2019. Again, that's a show with Dr. Orwa Hehi Medurain in Comet, okay, the Year of Return. That's the name of the show, and that was approximately a week ago. If you haven't followed the show on Blog Talk Radio, all you have to do is click follow if you're listening online, and then you will be notified of the date, the time, the guest, and the topic. If you're listening by phone and you'd like to follow the show and be notified, then all you have to do is go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Jawanza. That's J-A-W-A-N like Nigeria, Z like Zimbabwe, A, the number 4, life, L-I-F-E, okay? That's www.blogtalkradio.com/Jawanza for life, and that will take you to the actual Health, Wealth, and Divine site, and then you can follow the show and be notified again of every show prior to the show, and you'll be notified of the date, the time, the guest, and the topic. Okay, so again, everybody, I want to say, Duau, thank you so much for taking the time to tune in. The numbers are growing. They're listening all over the world. I mean, all over the world, listening in the Netherlands, in China, I mean, all across the United States. And so, again, thank you all for your time. You could be doing anything, but you've decided to take time out and spend part of your evening with my person and Professor Joseph T. Geiger. Okay? So, until the next time, everybody, again, Duau, thank you so much for your time. My name is Juwanza. Who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you? Etepu.